Sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. No short.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today I'm joined on the show by the Green Party candidate for Congress from the 1st Congressional District, Mike DeRosa. The Democratic candidate John Larson and the Republican candidate Matthew Corey were also invited to participate, but they didn't respond to my email requests for them to be on the show. And in a follow-up call to their offices, I could not reach anyone at Corey's office and was told by a staff member at Larson's office that he had a prior commitment. So let's begin our discussion with the Green Party candidate from the 1st Congressional District. Mike DeRosa, welcome to the show.
Cheryl, thank you so much for having me on.
So tell me, Mike, what motivated you to run for Congress in the 1st Congressional District against a guy who's been there for 20 years?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest issue is the issue of the two major parties having dominance over the political dialogue. And I think that there are legitimate third party and fourth party and fifth party positions. And the Green Party is my party of choice. And that's what it's all about. And my slogan in my campaign for Congress is more voices and more choices in the U.S. Congress now. And that's really my motivating factor, is to say that we need a lot more scrutiny of our Congress because it is not doing its job when it comes to oversight. And that was one of the main reasons, which I'm sure we'll get into as we go through the program, about why I was running, because we have these endless wars and we don't have any declaration of war. What are we doing in Yemen? I have no idea what that's about.
They're a big threat to us.
Right. There's a civil war going on there. There's four different groups who are trying to get power there. Why are we siding with a major power to intervene in that country? And there isn't, and there hasn't been, a good reason for why we're involved there. And the Congress should be having hearings about what we're doing there in other places, including Syria and other places.
We're at an institution of higher learning here. Tell us what you would do to help students out with all this student debt. I mean, these kids are dying under all of this debt. You know, starting your life out that way is pretty horrible. What would you do to help them out?
Well, I think that this is one of the critical issues of this campaign. And I am very concerned about what's going on with our student population and the student debt that they are amassing. This is debt that they will never be able to pay back. And it's creating, in my opinion, a debt colony managed by the 1%. And this is not hyperbole. What we have here are private financial institutions who know that if students default, the U.S. government will pay them off. And so they have no incentive in any meaningful way. There's a few programs out there, but there was just a study done about a week ago. It was publicized a week ago that said that the attempts to rehabilitate, as they say, students who have defaulted has failed, and that one out of three will go back into default. And once you go into default the second time, it's all over. So a lot of this debt was accumulated under false pretenses. We have a lot of problems at our universities today because what's going on is the government is shifting money away from education into war, into really corruption. And what's going on is that students and families are now assuming the costs of education, especially in state education. Now, let me give you a really graphic example of what I'm talking about. I graduated from the University of Connecticut. I got a BA in history in 1966. My tuition costs at the University of Connecticut were $100 per semester. for as many credits as you want. Today, the cost of the same education at the University of Connecticut is $13,336, give or take a few bucks. And that's just the tuition. I paid $620 a year. That included the $200 for tuition and $420 for room and board. Now you can say, well, Mike, things were less expensive back then. The average person made $6,200 during that period. I checked it out. I remember it. I'm living history, as it were. And today, the average person makes about $50,000. So the bottom line in all of this is that there's a great discrepancy. Basically, it's $1 to $3 today in terms of what the average person makes to get a full education based on the yearly salary of the average person. Maybe one out of four, $1 every $4. When I went to school, it was one out of 30 or one out of $31. Now, what is the ratio here? You know, the ratio is way out of whack. Inflation hasn't gone up that much. It hasn't gone up to the point where it's anything like what I was dealing with back then. And this is true of my opponent, John Larson. John went to Central Connecticut State University in 1971, and I discussed this at the meeting, and his proposal, as far as I know, the only thing he brought up at the debate that I was involved with him, was that we should allow these students to work off their debt through public service. So why did John and I get a free education at state universities, and now he's asking this whole generation to work off their debt?
And sometimes their debts are huge. They're $150,000, $200,000 these kids are paying off. So it's, you know, a long time to work that off also. And that leads me to my next question, unless you wanted to pick up on that. No. Almost 60%, or I think it might even be more than it now, 60% of our federal budget goes to the Department of Defense, the military, in some way. And in other countries, they can provide free university education for their young people. If we didn't spend so much on the military here, couldn't we do that here? And secondly, what would you do to reduce that military budget and get us out of all these wars that we're in?
Well, the first issue is that this is Keynesian militarism. What is going on is that we are supporting a military-industrial congressional media complex to the tune of well over $1 trillion if you include what it's going to cost us in interest. The War Resisters League has done some serious research about this, and it's about $1.3 trillion if you include all of the ancillary costs and the interest that's related to this over a period of 30 or 40 years. And we have this situation now where essentially what's going on is we're creating jobs in the military. We produce this hardware. We have to do something to get rid of it so we can produce more jobs. So we have these wars all over the world. There's also the involvement of the U.S. in the oil industry. And this is part of our reason for being in the Middle East. It may not even be a case of necessarily grabbing the oil and selling it. Like in Libya, we overthrew the government there and they stopped pumping oil. Well, this was really good for a lot of oil producing countries like Saudi Arabia and Qatar and some of these other places where that's their main industry. Here, our industry is the military. So what we're talking about is cutting the military budget in half. And the only way we can do that is to reduce the number of wars that we have around the world. And why are we at war with everybody? I think the real problem here is that what we're doing is we're doing things that are not in our self-interest. For example, a lot of economists will say, if you have a military job and you spend $1 billion on military jobs, get about 7,000 jobs per $1 billion. If you use it for education, it's up about 22,000 jobs. If you use it for a green job, it's up about 24,000 jobs. If you put it into any other activity which is peaceful and productive, it's well over 18,000 jobs. So what's really going on is that these are high-tech industries whose main purpose is to create military weapons, which are then used indiscriminately to kill people in other countries. Most of these wars are illegal and they're unconstitutional. None of them have been approved in any significant way by the UN, which is required for it to be legal. But even under our Constitution, these wars are not legal because there's not a declaration of war. And I will demand as a congressman from Connecticut that we have a declaration of war before we go bomb someplace. And I'm also going to be very concerned and sagacious about the idea of enforcing the War Powers Act, because the War Powers Act is being ignored by the Congress. Now, there's a few people on the left in the Congress and a few people on the right of the Congress who agree with me. Many of them have their own little group, and I would join that group. I don't know what you would call it. I think everybody else is the war party, so maybe we're the anti-war party.
We have United Technologies here, Pratt & Whitney, making war machines. What would you do about that?
Well, we can convert these industries. And there, over the years, there have been many proposals put forward by the International Machinists and many other unions. And they attempted to diversify these industries, because basically what you have when you're making a motor is you're creating a mechanical device which can be used for transportation, creation of energy. There are many, many things that could be done in an electric boat. They build boats. Why couldn't we build boats down there? The other part of it, of course, is that we have in every congressional district in the United States, we either have a base or a factory. I mean, look at the commercials that are being put out by the Democrats. Blumenthal and John Larson, what they're saying is, you know, we saved these military jobs for you, so we should be immediately elected. I find this very, very troubling. And I think that we need leadership. And I really like John Larson. I think he's a very good guy. He always allows me in the debates. He seems to be open to ideas. He's willing to discuss things. But like a lot of people, he is part of the problem in that he has been captured by these interests, and he has a high position in the Congress, and he has very little flexibility in terms of addressing these issues. And I know that he has voted against these wars, but then he turns around and votes for this bloated military budget. And this is a contradiction which I find unacceptable.
What would you do? You know, we're enmeshed in Syria right now and are still in Iraq. We've destroyed Libya. Afghanistan is falling apart and we're still there. What would you do in Syria with ISIS? It looks like all the evidence that I've uncovered shows that it's actually the U.S. and its allies there that are funding, supporting, and have created ISIS. It's like a spinoff of Al-Qaeda there. So what would you do to get us out of Syria and get that situation?
Well, let's go back to General Wesley Clark. General Wesley Clark was NATO commander. He's not a peacenik. And he was in the Pentagon 4 days or 5 days after 9/11. And he was talking to some of his military buddies. And one of them came up and said, you know, I got this memo from Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld and so forth that we're going to overthrow 7 governments in the next 5 years in the Middle East. And he says, this is crazy. I don't understand it. What have these countries done to us? Why are we going to overthrow them? And that was the beginning of our Middle East adventures. It goes even earlier, certainly with the Bushes, to the first Gulf War, and even earlier than that. So the issue is that these wars, in my opinion, and I think in the opinion of Wesley Clark, because he keeps talking about this in his book and in speeches, that there's something unusual going on here. Why are we overthrowing secular countries in the Middle East and pandering to religious fanatics who run essentially dictatorships? And the big untold story of Hillary Clinton and the Benghazi situation is not that she had simply a server which was not secured. I mean, that's certainly part of it. But real question here is there was an illegal gun running operation and an illegal terrorist operation that took place in Benghazi when Gaddafi was overthrown. And there's a lot of evidence, it's prima facie evidence, that these weapons that were in Libya were transported to Syria. And this was used to start a war there. So why are we instigating these things? Why is the CIA, these orders are coming from on high. And the real question is, do we want this to be our foreign policy? I think we have a right as citizens of the United States to ask questions about what happened there. And we need to have serious investigations of what's been going on in this country, particularly about the surveillance state, about assassinations that have taken place over the last 30, 40 years, and false flag operations, if you want to call them that. All of our congressional investigations on the JFK murder were subverted. The Warren Commission and then the Select Committee on Assassinations, they were stopped from really finishing the job, and that can be proven. So we need really good investigations. And we did have a few with the Church Committee and the Rockefeller Committee and the Irvin Committee. They looked into these matters and found out some information that was not readily available, and it changed some of our policy. And the problem is that in American history, there are periods where we go up and down. We have an upsurge of this sort of militarism and surveillance state and repression, and then another party comes along and taps that down. We saw that in the First World War. It happened during the Cold War. It's happened for many, many years. But what we have now is a situation where the two parties work together. I call them the war party. And essentially what they're selling is war, war, and more war. And what the Green Party is selling is peace, prosperity, jobs, justice, and freedom. And that's what we're all about.
Yeah. And those seven countries that Wesley Clark stated that you just mentioned were Iraq, Iran, Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Sudan, and Somalia. And, you know, I think there's only one left that we haven't been meddling in, and that would be Iran. And I'm pretty sure they've added Russia and China to the list now also, although that's just my own opinion. But, Mike, you brought up these investigations, and since this is a show about 9/11, what would you do if elected to look into and expose the truth about 9/11?
Well, we have to have an investigation of 9/11. We didn't really have an investigation. I mean, it was a whitewash of the worst type. And the initial investigation, when the questions about Building 7 came out, they didn't even have a section in it. They said, well, we don't know what happened. It took them years later to come up with a theory, which doesn't hold water, about how that collapse took place. And that's the smoking gun in New York City. But there's certainly a need for a thorough investigation of what 9/11 was, who perpetrated it, how deeply we were involved in it. If at all, we don't know. I mean, these are the questions. I have my own suppositions. There are a lot of citizen investigators out here that are getting a lot of pushback. Right now, all you have to say is you're a conspiracy theorist, and everything you say after that is dismissed as tin foil hat nonsense. You know, some of this is true, and we need to find out the truth about what happened on 9/11, because it has influenced the last 16 years of our existence here in the United States, and has poisoned the political process, and has created much mayhem and death all over the world. And there should be a reason for that.
Yeah. And you had mentioned these false flag events, of which 9/11 was one. But there's also been the domestic terrorism, and many of those, and even Fox News talks about this, many of those have been set up. These people have been groomed and entrapped by the FBI, often mentally unsound people, to do these domestic terrorist events. What would you do about that? Would you have some kind of an investigation, or how would you go after that, the truth about those?
Our Constitution is based on the principle of shared power. When the Founding Fathers put it together, they were aware of the fact that there had been other attempts at democracy, at a republic in the past. And they knew that, you know, military dictators ultimately, or empire builders, took over those countries. For example, Rome became an empire. And I know one thing for a fact, and that is that you can't have an empire and a republic. You either can have an empire or you can have a republic. And the empire is gaining power. Now, to refer back to your question, all empires need enemies. This is how they survive. Internal enemies, external enemies. This is part of the paradigm that makes empires possible and makes them survive. So I think that part of what we have to do in the Congress is to be the independent watchdog of what is going on in domestic policies. These agencies that we know very little about. These secret agencies are perpetuating criminal activity. They're kind of a murder incorporated. And this is what came out of the church committee, where all the assassinations, all of the false flag operations, all the black bag jobs that were taking place in the 50s and 60s and 70s. I was aware of this as an activist in the 60s. I ran into it all over the place. Agent provocateurs being put into operations. Now you can go to Paranoid's Paradise so we can find out the truth. So I would be pushing very hard for serious investigations of all these matters, so that this is the responsibility of the Congress. It's supposed to be an independent agency to keep control over the executive branch, whatever the executive branch is. And the judiciary is there to be a third force that is available for the people. Now, the House of Representatives is supposed to be the House of the people. It's not supposed to be the House of the special interests.
Right. And how would you react if you were elected to Congress in the first district here and you were approached by lobbyists and corporations and everybody trying to offer you funds for your campaign? How would you react to them?
Well, I don't take any corporate money during my campaign. I don't want corporate money. I will take money from individuals, but I will not take money from corporations. And that's, I think, how we have to operate. Do corporations have a right to express their opinion? No. Are they persons? No, I don't think they're persons, because a corporation can live forever. We as humans do not live forever. So they can recreate themselves. They can create their own mothers and fathers and reproduce themselves. That's not what we can do. So they're not really biological persons in any sense of the word. And they're certainly not political persons in any sense of reality. This is part of the problem, is that the corporate state controls our media. It controls our military. It controls our politicians. It's time for politicians to stand up and say, no, we're not going to take this money, and say that these other folks out here that are taking their money, that people shouldn't vote for them, you know?
Since 9/11, our civil liberties have been encroached on, and we've lost a lot of our civil liberties, and we've become more like a police state. What would you do if elected to rein in the NSA from all the surveillance, the Patriot Act, the National Defense Authorization Act that allows the president to murder Americans just because he suspects that they might be involved in terrorism? No proof, just a suspicion.
Well, first of all, we have something called the Fourth Amendment, and that is not being enforced. We also have the 14th Amendment, equal protection under the law, and we have the First Amendment, free speech, and we have laws that cover these areas. They need to be enforced. I mean, it's quite simple. If we have a problem with the NSA, which some people call no such agency, then we need to have hearings, and we need to ask the difficult questions from these people and find out why they're violating the Fourth Amendment with impunity, I might add. And we need to support whistleblowers. Ed Snowden is exiled in Russia for what? For doing what any honest American would do, which is to say that the government is violating its own laws and that people need to know about it. Julian Assange is locked up in an Ecuadorian embassy in a small room there. He's being held hostage to the U.S. government, to the Swedish government, to other governments, including the U.K. He's a major embarrassment because he's telling us about information that we're not supposed to know about. And they want to kill him and they want to get rid of him. Hillary Clinton said, they say it was in jest in some of these WikiLeaks exposures. You know, can we drone this guy? I mean, what is this supposed to mean? A major candidate for president in the United States is talking about killing someone, and they said, oh, it was in jest. She didn't really mean it. Well, she kept talking about it for 5 or 10 minutes, according to the WikiLeaks people that were quoted at the meeting. So again, Chelsea Manning, a very brave private in the military, you know, he's going to be in a cage for the rest of his life simply because he exposed a video which showed illegal things going on, the killing of civilians, and also expose other information. If we don't let these people speak, then we will not know what our government is doing in our name. And it's certainly important that Congress get on board and investigate this and put a stop to this stuff, because it is not helping our foreign policy. It is creating enemies to the United States all over the world. And it really is hypocritical, because how can we stand up and talk about peace and freedom and justice, that we stand up for these things as a nation and perform these illegal and unconstitutional acts and create mayhem all over the world? What is the purpose of this? If they want to build an empire, that's fine, but let's tell people that we're not going to have a republic anymore, that we're going to have an empire, and then we can have the American empire. But, you know, if we want a republic, and in my opinion, a democracy, then we need to stand up and speak out. And that's why I'm running for Congress. I'm running for Congress because I believe that the American people want this type of government. And if they had a chance to hear about it, and if they had a chance to discuss it, they would embrace it. And it's the idea of free speech is it's not free. And if you don't use it, you're going to lose it.
Mike, one last question. Can you tell me what kind of obstacles the two-party system puts in front of third parties so that they can't really get on the ballot and run? What kind of obstacles are there?
Well, it's very pervasive and it's very insidious. A person who was the head of the Political Science Association of America said the two major parties are basically on life support, and the two things that keep them alive are a whole lot of money, like we're talking, you know, billions of dollars, and control over ballot access. And so each state has different ballot access laws. We were very sagacious this year. We collected 16,800 signatures, more than twice as much as we needed, and we needed them because we wouldn't have been on the ballot. So this is the way they suppress alternative viewpoints and alternative parties. We all know that all parties in Connecticut are equal, but some parties are more equal than others. And we're discriminated against in the media. I can't tell you the number of media people I've called to get no response back from them. So I really appreciate an opportunity to be on this show and to be able to speak freely. And I think that most Americans agree with what I'm saying. And what they're convincing people is you have to vote for the lesser of the two evils. Well, that's baloney. If you vote for the lesser of the two evils, you're going to get the evil of the two lessers. And the other problem is that there really isn't two parties. There's only one party. And what you have a choice in this election is the alternative parties or big brother or big sister. And this coin has been minted, and no matter how many times you throw it up in the air, when it lands, it's heads you lose, tails you lose. So it's time to stand up and say once and for all that we need a change, and we need to vote for what we want and what we need instead of what they're serving us, which is just, in my opinion, more war, more destruction, more economic disasters, more educational disasters. We have a plan. It's called the Green New Deal, and it's about peace, freedom, and justice. And I hope people will step up and vote for one of the third parties this year, because your life may depend on it.
Well, Mike, thank you for being on the show. I really appreciate your coming on and talking. I know the other two candidates couldn't make it, so I appreciate your being here.
Well, I really appreciate the opportunity, and I would leave our listeners with the following phrase: vote clean, vote green.
Okay. And as Ralph Nader said, vote your conscience.
Absolutely. And thanks again for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike. And again, you were just listening to a discussion with Green Party candidate Mike DeRosa, who's running for Congress in the 1st Congressional District, representing the state of Connecticut. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.